Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, June 5th, 2015. And with me today, I have John Martellaro. How are you, John?
Good morning. I am excellent.
Awesome. And in reverse alphabetical order, Brian Chaffin, how are you? And all of you playing along at home, run the recording backwards for your special surprise.
What he was trying to say was, Entschuldigung, Sie mir bitte.
Don't play it backwards for that special surprise. Anyhow, it's great to have both of you here, regardless of which direction you speak and which direction I decide to run the alphabet today. And I thought that we could start by taking a look at the whole thing with AT&T moving away from subsidized phone plans. And for those of you that aren't up to speed on this yet, Friday morning on Apple's website, there was a change in options for buying an iPhone with an AT&T plan. So instead of offering a two-year contract with a subsidized phone price, you now have the option of AT&T's Next plan, which in that sense, it isn't an option. That's how you buy it. The option comes in, do you want to pay the unsubsidized price of your phone spread out as an interest-free loan over 12 months, 18 months, or 24 months. So AT&T is moving forward with their plans to get away from subsidized phone contracts.
Which is fascinating because way back in June 3rd of 2015,
way long ago,
otherwise known as Wednesday,
right?
Ralph De La Vega, AT&T CEO, said, and I quote, "I think it is one of those options, i.e. subsidized phone plans, that is going to go away slowly, not because we insist on it, but because customers will choose it less often." Now, I realize, that was, in fact, 2 days ago. And, it's difficult to see into the future by, when you're the president or the CEO of a large corporation of what you're going to be doing in 2 days. But it's fascinating that he made that comment 2 days ago.
And in his defense, Brian, if our only choice is the next plan, we will, by definition, be choosing subsidized plans less frequently.
Well, here, that's you make a fair point, Jeff. But that said, I'm not necessarily critical of this. My current phone was purchased under the next plan. For all intents and purposes, the next plan is very similar to getting a subsidized phone, except for you don't keep paying for it after you've paid for it.
Right. Now, if this sounds familiar, this is what T-Mobile has been offering for a little while now.
Right, and everyone, Ralph De La Vega denied that they were reacting to Next, but it did seem like a,
of course.
Reacting to T-Mobile.
What Ralph said was that AT&T was working on this at the same time as T-Mobile, and it just so happens that T-Mobile launched theirs first.
Yeah, he said by a couple of weeks, but it sure seemed longer than that to me.
Yeah, it sure seemed a lot longer than that to me as well.
But the flip side of this too is that with the next plan, you can get a new device every year. Now, if you choose that option, you actually have to turn your phone in.
Right. So this is if you choose the 18-month plan, and then after 12 months, you give your phone back, get a new phone. You don't pay that extra 6 months on the loan for your original phone, and then you get a new phone on, and presumably you choose another 18-month plan and pay on that for a year, and then you can turn that one in a year later.
I'm going to have to do some math now because I've gotten good payments from my old phones. Really has helped
a
lot.
Yeah, you have. That's true. But I mean, at the price of having to do a hand-me-down system in your household.
Right, right. I get a new phone every year, but at the price of the interleaved two-year contracts between me and my wife. So every year I get a new phone and then pass it down to her. And
you could continue to do that, John. That's the thing here. You could continue to do exactly that with this system, except for after 18 months, you would no longer be paying for the old phone, which you currently do. So if you kept your hand-me-down system and you and your wife were happy with the fact that one of you who wasn't you was going to get the hand-me-down, you could just continue to do this. But like I say, your phone payments will actually drop once the device is actually paid for.
That could work. I like that.
Yeah. At first, when AT&T started talking about the next plan, simply because I have an inherent distrust in phone companies, I was looking at this and thinking, oh man, I'm going to be so screwed. But for someone like me who does end up getting the next phone every time it comes out, this saves me from having to do contract juggling.
It's true. Yeah. You know, we're of course, a little bit different from a lot of folks because we need to get the latest and greatest as part of our jobs. But there are plenty of people out there who just simply want the latest and greatest, period. Of course, I mean, we want the latest and greatest too, don't get me wrong. But I mean, we actually have to whenever right. possible because of our jobs. So, right. But I don't know. You know, really what this means is that the phone subsidy is being replaced by a phone loan.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly what this is. This is an interest-free loan for 12, 18, or 24 months, depending on what you choose. But you can also look at it as a phone lease. So looking at the 18-month plan again, if you do that, knowing you're going to replace your phone every year, you pay 12 months on an 18-month plan, trade in the phone, get the new model, and then pay 12 months on an 18-month plan and do it all again.
Right, which is probably the most hassle-free way to do it. That's actually probably the best way from AT&T's standpoint to do it too, because they're probably going to make the most money off of you that way.
Right. Yeah.
Because they will in fact be able to flip that phone and sell it on the used market.
And thank goodness when you turn that phone in, you delete the hardware encryption key and it's safe to do it. Thank goodness.
Thank goodness the voice of paranoia was here to remind us.
Yay, John. Yeah. So anyhow, if you're looking at what AT&T is doing now and you're really worried about whether or not you're going to get screwed, I'm guessing that you may not.
Not really. Listen, folks, the next plan is so much more transparent. And especially if you keep your phone for more than 2 years past the contract. I mean, you know, listen, every time when you get a subsidized phone under the old system, under all of the subsidized systems, if you get a subsidized phone and you do not get a new device every 2 years, that's when you're screwing yourself.
That's true, because you're paying for a phone even if you don't get a new one.
Yeah, you're paying that subsidy. You're paying the price of the subsidy is baked into your contract, and you're paying that price whether, you know, despite the fact that your device has long been paid off. So I mean, the next plan, what T-Mobile is doing, it's just all much more transparent. You know exactly what you're doing and what you're getting, and if you actually pay off your device, you stop paying for it.
Right. So that means your bill goes down.
Thank goodness for John LeGuerre at T-Mobile. He's really lit a fire into the industry.
It's true.
Yeah, he has. Yeah. So anyhow, it looks like I know exactly how I'm buying my next iPhone.
Is that going to be an iPhone 6S or is that going to be an iPhone 7?
I'll know this fall.
Almost surely 6S.
I heard some really strong rumors a few months ago that it was going to be 7, and that's kind of disappeared, and now we're back to 6S. 6S Plus, though, is kind of a mouthful.
Well, it's a big handful, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, there's another thing that I wanted to talk about today, and this is a piece that you wrote, Brian, yesterday, and this is about some of the comments that Mark Newson has been making about wearable tech and smart cars. And for those people that don't know who Mark Newson is, he is an industrial designer like Johnny Ive. He is a friend of Johnny Ive's, and he now is working alongside Johnny Ive at Apple.
Yes, and one of the things he said was, crikey, mate, we'll start to see more tech. No, I'm just kidding. He said, we'll start to
Your
see
French
more.
Your French accent is getting so much better.
We'll start to see more technology embedded in garments, magic woven in. There are some incredible things that are going to happen. Now,
I hope so, because Kelly Gumman was complaining the other day about how there's just no room in her jeans for her phone, and she wishes the women's fashion industry would get a clue about how to wear your phone.
I don't think that's what they're talking about.
Oh, you're talking about woven in?
Yeah, it's actually the fabric has sensors in it that allow different things to happen. So maybe the sensors could be monitoring health and fitness, or they could be for fashion. So let's say that you have a pair of pants, and I know this is a big stretch for me, people, but a pair of pants, and you decide that you want them to be a different color or different or have some pattern on them. You could build that into the fabric.
Yeah, there's a lots of different things you could do like that. We don't know specifically if that's what Mr. Newsom was talking about, and we don't even know specifically if he's actually speaking from his voice from within Apple. But it does, I don't know, it does seem to me likely that that's exactly what was helping to inform his opinion here.
Well, what was he talking about with smart cars, Brian?
The one comment he made about smart cars is that he said that there was lots of room because he was asked about cars and Apple, and of course he's not going to actually say anything about what he's specifically working on, but his comment for cars was that there was vast opportunity for cars to be more intelligent.
Oh, this is the user interface side of the car. This is how the car presents its operation to you, the user.
Well, I don't know. It could actually be a lot of things. It could be about how the car is driving, you know, self-driving cars. It could be about how a car reacts to road conditions or weather conditions or traffic conditions or, you know, its ability to park itself. Of course, we're already seeing things like that coming in cars anyway. Right. It certainly could be the user interface, but it could be the way the car... there's just so many ways that you interact with the car that could change.
This is a subject of great fascination to me because there are opportunities to do cool things in the cockpit in terms of either, you know, manually driven cars with heads-up displays and intelligent navigation or autonomous cars that know how to navigate their way around. But there's another fascinating subject, and that is the security and the safety of autonomous cars in terms of making a decision. A great example that was brought home to me by somebody a while back was an autonomous car that's driving along the street, and a kid comes jumping out on his bicycle between two parked cars, and all of a sudden the system has to make a decision. Is it going to run over the kid and save the passengers, or is it going to run the car into a ditch, saving the kid on the bicycle and killing the passengers, subject to airbags and all that? So there's lots of decisions that these cars are going to have to make. And it's one thing to be intelligent about, you know, navigation and presentation of options and Bluetooth and communication and internet access, but it's quite another thing for a car suddenly to start making life and death driving decisions. And software written by humans as part of that process is a perilous, difficult process. It's going to be a sea change in the way we write software, I hope.
I have a question, though. In what world do you have the dense population where the child is leaping out from between two parked cars, yet there's a death gully on the other side of the road?
It's just an example, Brian.
Okay, all right. Just checking.
But you can see what happens when cars start making decisions, and then you know there is this issue of licensing.
I think we actually ought to be worrying about the kid living on the street that has a death gully on the other side.
There's also the issue of licensing. You know, I read an article the other day about companies don't want you fussing with the software. It's a, you have an end user license. You're licensed to use the software, and then you're not in charge of it. You can't modify it, and so on and so on. So all of a sudden, here you have this software agreement that says, you know, you're not licensed to own the software in the car. You're only using the software as a participant. And then so when there's a terrible accident and the autonomous car kills somebody, the company's going to go, oh, yeah, we own the software. You don't have a right to use it or modify it. We just licensed you. We own it. Then the lawyers are going to smile and say, okay, field day, you own the software. You're responsible for that death.
We're seeing that already because cars are already loaded up with computers with proprietary software that has license agreements. It says we can't mess with them. And those computers are controlling braking systems and shifting and and fuel flow. And if the computer decides that the brakes shouldn't be applied, then your car's not going to slow down.
But you know what they've done? When Toyota a couple of years ago had the unintended acceleration problem, what they did was they would blame it on the driver. They would try to figure out a way to show that it wasn't really their software problem. There was a driver who was doing something like pressing the wrong pedal in a moment of panic. But when you have an autonomous car where you're sitting in the back seat, you know, playing cards with friends and the car crashes, there's no more opportunity to blame it on anybody else except them.
I'm betting that their legal teams will figure out how to blame it on the victim in the wreck.
Yeah. If you'd been paying attention, you could have seized control and averted the accident, right?
Yeah, oh, or the person that you hit. It's their fault.
Oh, my. Yeah. It's going to be an interesting few years as we move into these autonomous cars. And I was doing an interview yesterday with a company that works on secure software, and their focus is on computer written software because, in their view, software written by humans in critical situations is too susceptible to security snafus and to bugs. And they're working on systems where only the computer writes the software, and it's trusted because it's tested. So we got to eventually transition, I think, to a point where we stop letting humans sit there with a cup of coffee and write, you know, 100,000 lines of code in some subsystem that's full of bugs and can be hacked into. So that's going to have to change, too.
I'm calling Balderdash, man.
Go ahead.
This is like a total tangent, but I don't think we're anywhere close to the point where computers can create software.
Yeah, well, my eyes were opened a little bit yesterday in an interview, and I'll be talking about it next week. But my personal view is that this kind of software is too important to be left to humans.
All right, I have to go back to the wearable stuff.
Okay,
sorry.
Return from subroutine.
Yeah, return from subroutine. The one market where it just occurred to me that wearable tech in clothing could become a really big thing is in the sex industry.
Oh, you mean I can sit here and write my articles and get a massage from my pants?
Yep.
Nice.
And then we put your pants on your Wi-Fi network, and then we can put an app on Brian's iPhone, and he can massage you remotely.
Or you can tickle me with your heartbeat on your Apple Watch and send it over, and I can feel your pulse in my pocket.
Yes. Yes, you can. Yes. And but from a promotional standpoint, and we've seen this show up in stories and movies for years, where you have, say, a T-shirt that you're wearing, and you want to have an Apple logo on it today. All right, well, now it's an Apple logo. And then maybe tomorrow you want it to be the Mountain Dew logo, and now it's that. Or as you're walking down the street, it's linking up to stores that you're going by, and now you become a walking billboard for
that would come in perfect in that ice hockey commercial where the woman who's got the San Jose Sharks T-shirt and the guy's got the LA Kings T-shirt. As soon as he sees her shirt, he can switch affiliation and get along better in a sports bar.
And see, it comes back around to sex.
Yep.
The, you know, there's one other thing from this interview that I thought was worthy of mentioning, and that's that he said, first of all, that he's working. This is Mark Newsom. He's spending 60% of his time with Apple. He's got a number of jobs, and you know, he owns a couple of his own companies. But he's spending 60% of his time on Apple projects at this point. And he specifically said that he hoped to stay at the company indefinitely. And considering the fact that he's at Apple because he's best mates with Johnny Ive, they are, in fact, best friends, to me, this was yet more very extraordinarily strong circumstantial evidence that Johnny Ive didn't get promoted to the C-suite so that he could quit, which is still driving me nuts. It really, really, really annoys me that people are trying to make hay out of that.
You know, that's a really good point. And I'm with you. I don't think that Johnny's new job is the beginning of an exit strategy. I don't think that at all.
It's just you don't promote people to the C-suite to fire so that they can leave.
I agree with you, Brian, 100%.
It's yep. not the way corporate America works.
And my guess is that if Mark knew that Johnny was a short timer at Apple.
And he would.
And he would. He wouldn't have come on board.
He wouldn't come. He probably wouldn't have come on board in the first place. But he wouldn't be making statements that he hopes to stay there indefinitely. Now, he did say that Apple, I'm quoting, Apple is exceptional. It does things exactly the way they need to be done or not at all. The way a product is made is as important as its design. Everything has to be correct. So clearly, he, you know, these sorts of philosophies resonate with him, mm-hmm. and that could encourage him to stay there indefinitely. But Johnny Ive's not leaving anytime soon.
He might be spending some more time in England because he'll be free to do so.
But he's certainly not leaving Apple.
Right.
All right, we're out of time. So thank you, Brian, for being here today.
Yep. Thanks for having us.
It's always great to have you. And John, thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
And I'll get to work on that app, Brian, so that you can control John's pants.
Yay!
Listeners, thank you for joining us yet again today. Head over to the iTunes store, please, and rate the show, because when you do that, it gives me some great feedback, and it lets other people know how much you love listening to the show, and it makes it easier for them to find us, too. So please go do that. We'll see everyone again next week.